Yeah, I've heard that they were talking about that on the news the other day. How they
Yeah.
a big movement basically going out there trying to push for legalization in North Carolina.
Well, here's the thing too. And this has always been my like just kind of own non really factual knowledge, but assumption based that I feel is backed by some, general knowledge. But you have to assume that with the growing rate of Charlotte and how much the city or the state of North Carolina in general is becoming like an actual top 10, top 15 state in America. You look at all the other states ahead of it and all the growing economies, and you think, well, what do they have in common?
Yeah.
Oh, they just fucking legalized weed. And then you also look at America as a whole and the United States, it's like, why wouldn't we federally legalize this? Walk up to the World Health Organization and be the leading proprietor. Like, this could change a third world country in a matter of minutes. You know what I'm saying? Like, this could literally become a dominant force in healthcare. Oh, but physicians don't want money laws. Oh, but physicians can also prescribe the usage of marijuana. Like, if they wanted to, they could take it over.
Yeah.
But it's like they don't want that on their name. And it's like, okay, well then just let us do it as persons, as individuals. Let us abide by our own regulations for marijuana. No, you can't do that either because we at some point are going to want the money from it. So it's like, bro, what the fuck? Like, that shit's crazy to me. We could literally change lives throughout the world with the drop of a hat. We don't have to do anything except introduce some seeds and genetics to, like, I don't know, Africa, anywhere. Like, Africa, we took all the land race strains that were growing in Africa and brought them here. And
Yeah.
now they don't have any more natural growing weed. You know what I'm saying? Give that back and just watch what happens. It's crazy.
Yeah,
But
crazy.
yeah. My bad. I had to go on a little rant there.
Nah, man, I like to hear stuff like that 'cause you're more invested in that field than I am. You know more. I would like to know more, but also I'm not really into using, so it's not my, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't actually smoke
Man,
more, so it's not.
it's fucking, I tell you what though, seeing it fully legal and working in the industry,
Yeah.
it's way more than just smoking. Half of my clientele does not smoke. It's more like it's a booming industry now for like topicals and tinctures and like things of that nature. It's
Yeah.
like a small pharmacy away from it. So I love that too. That's probably one of the coolest things about it is that it's not just me serving a bunch of potheads, you know what I'm saying? This shit's fire, you know what I'm saying? Let's go roll a doobie out back. There's a lot of, mid-level cancer patients, athletes coming in. I've got a few like doctors that are like coming in to like get their little fucking vape cartridge they're gonna hide from their work, you know. Actually, I have this one guy, it's pretty funny. He comes in every week and buys the legal limit in every category.
Really?
Yeah, and you want to know what he does?
What, resells it?
No, he gives it out as samples to his patients. He's a doctor. Yeah. He's like introducing his patients. He runs like his own practice, obviously,
Yeah.
or otherwise, I don't think he would just be funded by a hospital. But yeah, he says that if he has anyone that's ever skeptical about it, his best routine of giving someone knowledge is to just letting them try it because everybody's different, you know?
Yeah.
Your body's going to treat it different. And he said he's had an alarming amount of success with just transferring someone from some form of like an opiate to some level of cannabis.
Yeah.
And it's like
Pain management.
that in itself is just crazy.
For pain management.
For pain management, for fucking anything from like borderline mild to severe anxiety to depression. There's a few small terp like natural terpenes that grow in certain cannabis plants that
Yeah.
are actually appetite suppressants. as opposed to, you know, like giving you the munchies and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, there's so much. There's one of the main cannabinoids that's like a precursor to THC is CBG. And that's like one of the biggest anti-inflammatories, like that's naturally occurring on the planet through a bunch of natural terpenes. Like it's type of shit, CBG.
CBG.
Yeah, yeah. CBD is an anti-inflammatory and all that as well, but CBG is almost triple that.
Yeah.
It's just harder to isolate. And one of the good things about it is that like CBD, most of the cannabinoids in weed are non-psychoactive, except obviously THC. CBG is still non-psychoactive, but it gives off the subconscious feeling of almost like smoking a mid-level sativa.
Yeah.
Really social, super bubbly, like a great leisurely throughout the day type thing. Very nice, obviously, for fixing someone who's like got mild depression or anything from, you know, just wanting a little bit of boost in your day.
Yeah.
And the great part about it is that it's extremely healthy for your body. A lot of people don't know that your body is built on an endocannabinoid system, which like, I don't think, me personally, I do not think that was a mistake, that cannabis and the cannabinoid system in the ground is growing naturally on Earth, and your body has an endocannabinoid system in it that is built on your receptors for pain, growth, all that. So it's just like, yes, weed literally goes hand in hand with certain receptors in your body. I don't think that's a fucking mistake. Yeah, I don't think it's a coincidence at all. It's just about using it right, using it properly, you know? Not everything has to be about just getting fucking stoned.
But it can be. Even for somebody like me, who, when I was, that's all I was doing. Like, I feel like, you know, someone like me could take what you just said and apply it, like, in the right way or in a better way, and it could be beneficial, like, to just daily life in general.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, man. And that's exactly what I want to do, like, furthering in the industry, is to be more about education. Like, I don't really care what you're spending. I don't care what you, you know, want to do. But I just want to know, like, what you want to feel. You know, there's a reason that everyone is coming to this cannabis shop today. Or if not, there's a reason why you're not going in there. And I, like, want to change that. Because everyone has issues. And I guarantee you, there's at least one thing that this plant can do for anyone. Be that as it may, though, there's still such this negative stigma on it from certain people, which I think until the federal masses, or pretty much just the state of Texas, fucking gets on board with it,
yeah,
you know, we're going to be like a step behind always.
Welcome to episode 77 of the Pickup Podcast. It's your boy Marcus here, co-host Reggie, and we're going to get into athletes' mental health at the Olympics, PJ Tucker's crazy shoe collection, NBA trades and NBA drafts. So, you know, stick with us. We'll be right back.
Shit's mad interesting, man. So I know, like, so speaking of the stigma against it, so like last episode that me and Ant did, we talked about the Sha'Carri Richardson thing, and I know you weren't here for that, but obviously, you know, she got busted for using, I think it was like a day or a couple of days before the qualifying race. How did you feel about that? Because I mean, obviously, we all know it's not performance enhancing.
Mm-hmm.
But time, you know, like me and Ant were saying, basically, like the rules have been changed so much to where they basically allow for you to do whatever in the off season, in your off time, and they're just saying like not between the thing. But do you think it even should, since you know more about it, you think it should even be on there at all?
Absolutely not. And I think that's a big thing. Obviously, rules are rules. So for her, yeah, she fucked up and it sucks. But the reason that it sucks, I think, is like, I think that's why we're all looking at it the wrong way. Because like I said earlier about how I feel like America should be a leading proprietor in gaining the World Health Organization's, you know, go ahead on making this a world natural medicine, like it literally is.
Yeah.
Then You know what I'm saying? It's like we're shooting ourselves in the foot. This is an American athlete who has access to, I'm not sure where she's from originally, but half of the states in her origin country have access to legal cannabis. She is of one of the top athletes in this country, so she has access to some of the best medical knowledge. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's something that I think cannot be discounted when you look at the sheer fact that she may have messed up, but the rules are messed up. Like, even if they have been tweaked to where you can do it in the off season, she did just go through some sort of a grievance. Everyone has their own coping methods. I don't think between you and I, it should be our business as how she treated an individual coping mechanism. Obviously, when it's looked at as drugs are drugs and drugs are bad, it's hard to kind of get in the situation where you can't deny right from wrong. Right. And her, you know, she did do some wrong. But that's the thing that kills me, is I feel like it shouldn't have been looked at like that. If that girl just had a very big grievance in her life and she wanted to alleviate some pain by smoking a natural medicine that does not enhance any performance, that actually, if anything, might deteriorate some of her and make her work a little bit harder in the field that she's in to try to compete. And she's still at the best of her game. You know, I don't think that's for us to say that she's wrong, and to definitely punish her and make that a national stigma, now a world thing. And that's another thing, is I think we deprived her from going on to becoming a world known name, like, in a good way.
Well, the Olympic Committee is the one that banned her for 30 days, but it was the
right US. But then the US left her off the team,
right? So I just want to say, like, you know, between the two,
it's honestly, I think it's more so on the US.
Yeah,
because again, the US can stand up for their athlete.
That's a good ass point too, considering, like I said before, she was in Oregon. Is legal in Oregon where she was at. So it's not like she broke any U.S. laws. So I don't think the U.S. really should have had any. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And that's the crazy thing about it, too. It's like, all I knew is that she went to LSU. So I'm thinking, okay, they have, when I first heard it, they have a small, like, okay, and weed's not legal in Louisiana. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But it's like, even still, she's in Oregon, like you said. That's just one of the things where I don't think the U.S., you know, should have done anything negative. You know, at the very least, it should have been a standing support behind her positively. And I think that's the same thing that kind of goes into Simone Biles and Naomi Osaka.
Yeah.
Like, look at that. The second that they're not doing something for their country and they're doing something for them, it's an immediate question to their nature. Are they against the U.S.? Do they not want to stand up for the U.S.? Are they as strong as we say they are? Do they deserve to be in this light? Like, come on. Are you kidding me? These are two of the greatest women on the highest levels of their stages, yet as soon as they want to take a step back to focus on themselves, it's a question of, are they not standing up for their country? But at the same question, like, is their country standing up for them? Absolutely the fuck not. Not even close. So yeah. It's like, it's not even a two-way street. Yet anytime they do something for them, it's like they get hit by a bus by that same country that wants them to be so stood up for. And it's crazy. It's just mind-boggling.
So, like, yeah, the last time, well, talking about the Simone Biles thing, because obviously, she was in a position where she goes and has opportunity. I think she was the first person to qualify for every event final, like team final, individual all around, and then all four individual events. So she could have had a chance to win six golds or whatever. And obviously, the team all around, she pulled out of after. I'm not fully versed in the terms of what happened, but basically she was supposed to do a stunt, kind of fucked herself up in the middle of it, and she ended up landing it, but she was like, yeah, I'm not all the way here, so before I fuck myself up on some shit, I'm just going to sit out and let the other Olympic athletes handle the rest of it. And so I don't even think that's wrong, because, I mean, we always talk about, like, man, like, players that are, like, we talk always in terms of football and basketball, right? Like, we got people out here that are, you know, like Cam Newton went through that half a season where his arm was literally falling off, and we fucked ourselves out of a, you know, a playoff spot because he played like six games with half a shoulder. And I was like, well, damn, maybe he should have just like chilled out. I mean, everyone would have killed him like the same way that they're killing her. You know what I'm saying? Like, for not trying. But then at the flip side of it, if she did it and she fucked herself up, and everyone would be like, oh, why'd she make herself do that? So, like I said, I don't think they're getting the same type of support that people are clamoring from them. Like, they want you to put your body on the line and this, that, and the third. But the moment that you don't, you know.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with that. And this might be a little off field, but it's crazy, too, that I feel like the same people behind all of this hatred for her not putting herself on the line for them are the same people walking around not even willing to wear a mask for others. So, like, it's just fucking full circle right there.
I do think it's largely the same group of people that they just would have hated on her anyways. Like you said, there's the same group of people, like, they already, for one reason or another, have made up their mind that they don't like her and they're not supporting her. For one reason or another. And so I feel like it's just one of those things where you just have to know, like, all right, know the, like, kind of like knowing your audience, know who you're dealing with. It's like, okay, you're dealing with people that are already not, either not that intelligent or their opinion isn't as valid.
Absolutely.
But you can't really tell an athlete that, you know, when they're performing in front of the world like that, there's so much pressure that is on themselves, positive and negative. You know, there's the haters. There's, you know, the people calling her the GOAT because she's literally doing shit that's never been done before.
Exactly. Doing shit that, honestly, if some of these people did, it wouldn't end too well.
They had to outlaw her doing some shit because they were like, we can't even let other people try this shit.
Exactly.
Like, other people were literally, like, halfway killing themselves attempting to catch up to her. They had to nerf her.
Real life nerf session.
I was like,
this is insane.
At the end of the day, you really want to be like, you want to see people excel like that when they are at the top of their game, but like, kind of like at the same time, I do sometimes wish that sometimes they were protected from themselves. And I think she's kind of doing that and still catching the heat.
Absolutely.
Maybe.
And that's the thing that sucks too.
Maybe she needs some cannabis.
Maybe she needs some cannabis.
Maybe that, I'm not even kidding, man. We're talking about the high pressure, you know, of anxiety and all that stuff and, you know, potential depression, you know, type stuff going on between these high caliber athletes. Michael Phelps came out and, you know, supported her with that. Obviously, he's been in those same shoes of being that top athlete. So, like, yeah, like, maybe it really does all come full circle. Maybe it all ties in. Maybe that is the way.
And, you know, I feel like also, too, in the athletes' world of things, that's another leading, like, it directly ties back into medicine. You know what I'm saying? And athletes can be some of the biggest proprietors. One thing that, obviously, off record, no real knowledge about this, but I think Corday might be able to help Naomi out a little bit, if you feel what I'm saying. Like, I know that motherfucker's got some good shit, and you know, like, I'm just saying. But you know, legit though, to these wonderful, beautiful, amazing women, I just hope that they have enough of a support system behind them to know that A, they are as strong as they think they are. They're actually probably stronger, way stronger. Not probably, they are. And that B, none of these hating people behind these keyboards or even in your face will ever be as good as you ever. Never. It's in a different lifetime. You have already done enough, so you don't have to prove yourself to anybody. That's my takeaway that I hope that all of these wonderful women can hear, is that none of these people will ever be as good as them. So, fuck it.
I just kind of wish, you know, because, you know, there's people that, you know, I will never be as good as any of them at anything in life, probably. So does my opinion matter? No. But am I still going to give my opinion? Yes. And for some people, it doesn't matter whether they're good or not, or I'm better than, because, I mean, they don't want to feel better than someone, because when they feel better than, then they feel like they have to be better all the time. You know what I'm saying? And so the time that they feel like they're not, that's like when we watch fucking someone like PJ Tucker in the NBA go like 0-for-9, and then niggas on Twitter be like, I could have went out there and did that. PJ Tucker's not saying, you know, well, fuck, you could have, you know. He's like, man, fuck you, you know.
Absolutely.
I like that attitude because, like, I know he's – obviously, he's an NBA champion now. And someone like PJ Tucker, obviously, he's not at the top of his game, but he's better than
all the average
watching him, you know?
Yeah, exactly. 100 times better than the average guy sitting here watching.
So for him to brush it off, you know, I kind of like how – and not saying that, you know, PJ Tucker is any kind of like negative way to fans or anything like that, but you just the way that he is to people. PJ Tucker is actually cool as fuck on social media, especially with his shoe collection and shit. I wish Ant was here because he was talking about that with me on Instagram the other day. PJ Tucker's got a crazy ass shoe collection. Like I think he actually has a mini Nike factory with like 50 immigrant kids in his basement or some shit. Like,
absolutely.
Like churning them out for like 50 cents an hour or whatever they do.
I think
got Giannis's joints before Giannis.
Yeah, dude. I think he actually close friends to Buddy too.
Huh?
Clinker Hatfield, the little.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's like close friends with him as well.
Like that is the definition of plugged in.
As much as you can be. Yeah, dude, that motherfucker has probably the best collection I've ever seen. Like, for sure.
I don't even know if, like, a Nike museum has a better collection than him.
No, he is a walking Nike museum. Because I feel like the Nike museum doesn't have, like, the base street knowledge of, like, how hot this is. You know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes you just look at random closets and you're like, Damn, I forgot about that. And PJ Tucker has all of that. Oh. He's like a pair from everyone's damn, I forgot about that closet. Like, it's just crazy. When he started changing shoes at halftime at first, I was like, man, this guy. And I started paying attention to the shoes and I was like, no fucking way. No way he's got those on. Like, Nike would debut something like this out next month. Next thing you know, PJ Tucker's on the court with them. You're just like, no fucking way, dude.
Out there.
Absolutely respect that man.
And he always takes the hardest, like, basketball job on the court most of the time. It's usually guarding, like, a Kevin Durant or some shit.
PJ Tucker is one of those guys that just is an impact. It's not really – he's one of those guys that's not really a stat sheet stuffer. It's more of like, I'm in the game and I'm going to fuck with you. Whether you like it or not, dog, I'm here. Like, we're finna go at it all game long. I don't mind. Trust me. Is he from the DMV? He seems like a DMV type of guy.
I'm not sure, but I wouldn't doubt it.
Would not doubt it at all.
No, he's from – no, he's from Raleigh. Probably, yeah.
Even better.
Looking at Westbrook got traded to the Lakers. Do we actually give like the title of Big Three to the Lakers now with Davis, Westbrook, LeBron? Big Four, Andre Drummond.
Absolutely.
We're giving it to him?
Absolutely.
They are automatic contenders in the West now?
Automatic contenders in the West now. Nah, I don't. Here's the thing. I definitely think you can give them that tag. I don't think the team has gotten that much better. And that's not on Russell Westbrook. Let me make that be clear.
Really?
Absolutely.
So you're not seeing a huge increase between Russell Westbrook and them coming off of Dennis Schroeder?
Yeah, sure. If you look at, like, did we overall make our point guard position better? Sure. But did the Lakers get better as a team? Not necessarily. I don't see a world where what were you going to say?
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't see a world where these three players can form a solid, like, court ideal together. That just doesn't make sense. And then B, I don't think all three of them can potentially be. I would give the nod to Russell Westbrook with being the healthiest player on that team. And I feel like at any point, Russell Westbrook's left knee could just blow like a tire. At that point, I do say that the best fit for them is probably swapping LeBron and Westbrook on and off the court. Even still, I don't see how this made the Lakers better. You have traded half your team for a 31-year-old triple-double walking. You already have a 36-year-old walking triple-double practically. And then you have AD, Mr. Data Davis, whatever you want to say. It's just like, I don't see in a world where like this made them better. Sure, they have a big three because at any given moment, they can play like three of the top 10 players in the NBA. Sure. Can they do that for 82 games? Can they do it through the playoffs? Am I actually scared of them? Like, fuck no. Okay, absolutely well, not.
At any given, like, obviously you can say at any given time, one of them could get hurt because Anthony Data Davis, that is fine. Anthony Davis, obviously LeBron's, he's 36, going to be 37 by the next playoffs. I mean, so we're not talking about, you know, your average guys in their prime. And then Westbrook's had injury history as well, even though recently he's been, you know, on the healthier side. But, you know, obviously I get what you're saying there. But also at the same time, I feel like what you've done by getting someone like Westbrook, who is really energetic, that's kind of his, like, even when he's not good, he's always trying. You know what I'm saying? Like, on his worst game, he's shooting 2 of 15. He's still hustling. He's still making plays on defense, getting in people's faces, getting rebounds. He's passing the ball. He's, you know, going after loose ball, shit like that. He's energy at the very minimum. And I feel like what you do with someone like that is you take that stress off of your other two guys. Like, maybe Anthony Davis doesn't have to go, you know, bang for 15 rebounds a game, like how he got was getting smoked by Ayton. Even before he got hurt, he was getting smoked by Ayton inside in that first round series. LeBron, I'm not going to ask him at 37 years old to be that guy to go hunt rebounds. I mean, obviously you do want him to hustle or whatever, but I mean, you don't want, you know, to put that load on him 82 games a year and then 4 out of 7 games in the playoffs asking to win you like that. You know what I'm saying? In a series. So I feel like Westbrook brings the energy that I think that the rest of the team was lacking at times. Because look at who they traded. Guys who were supposed to be energy guys that were given no energy. Montrezl Harrell, what the fuck was he doing? Like, he was a non-factor in the playoffs. Kuzma, one of the, I mean, maybe I could say declines, but I feel like he kind of flashed in the pan and they banked on that as being more than that, and he wasn't. So, I mean, they got rid of guys who weren't what Westbrook is. You know what I'm saying? I feel like he actually does bring to the table what they lack.
Yeah, that's great and all, but, like, I feel like at the very end of the day, too, you need bodies, especially when you're not sure that the great bodies you have are going to always be on the court. Like, you saw what just happened with the Nets. They were the pound-for-pound best team in the NBA, especially if you look at, like, position-to-position base. They easily win 3 out of 5 positions any given day.
Yeah.
What happened was they eventually went from fucking any given day, pound for pound best, to shit, we've got 2 rotating superstars, to shit, we might have a superstar on the court this game.
Yeah.
And he has to play his best game to fucking and get an inch away from knocking a team out. You know what I'm saying? That is what I'm looking at the Lakers. But I'm not looking at Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving. I'm looking at Anthony Davis, LeBron James, and Russell Westbrook in 2022. I just that's some crazy shit to bank on, dog.
I mean,
look, wild.
Anthony Davis and LeBron James just won a championship in 2020.
They did, but like, and that was also on some crazy shit.
Your champions of the West in the first round, they had them down 2-1, you know, when the tires fell off on Anthony Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, LeBron's not carrying by himself at this age. not the same way it used to, not against legitimate competition. So I'm just saying, like, when LeBron was doing that before, he was younger and the competition was not nearly as stiff in the East as it is now. I mean, he carried that 2018 Cavs team against the Pacers, Raptors, and can't remember who else. Celtics, yeah. None of those teams were as good as the Suns this year. So, I mean, I don't expect him to, I mean, he did it then. It's, what, 4 years ago now. I don't expect him to do it now at his age. So, I feel like just having another guy, it gives you another buffer. Like, okay, like, maybe they still win that first-round series if Anthony Davis goes down and they still have a Westbrook on the court. Now it's not, okay, well, it's Westbrook and Davis, or it's LeBron and Davis, and neither of them can get hurt. It's the only way they win, which is basically what happened in the bubble. The bubble, everyone was healthy, like, full out. They had time before to get healthy. They came in healthy, and they stayed healthy throughout. It's kind of a perfect scenario for the Lakers in that sense.
And also, I hate to be a downer here, but, like, I have to say they didn't, you know, pick out their competition, so it's not their fault. But they did. They were, like, the better team. You know what I'm saying? We expected the Lakers to win the finals against the Heat. It wasn't really like the Heat might pull this one out. They're hot as fuck. It's like we all kind of knew at the bottom of our hearts, even though the Heat had done what they had to do, that it wasn't really a matchup. And from game one on, it wasn't. The moment that shit tipped off, it did not look like it was something that was going to be a fair series. So I will say the Lakers did what they had to do, and I give them that. Do I think they get a perfect situation again in the coming years? Hell no. I do not think LeBron will see another easy situation. And thusly, I don't think he'll see another ring. Not unless they do some fucking wild stuff, bring in DeMar DeRozan, Damian Lillard, and Kyle Kuzma back. I don't know. Like, I just feel like at the rate that they're going, they're doing everything to bank on having that big three. But the way they work, that big three will never be as sufficient as you want it to be. There's always going to be some sort of hole, which there always is with this, like, 2018 or 2019 and on Lakers team ever since they started making these mass moves. And again, they got a perfect situation when they won that ring. I don't see an ideal scenario just panning out for them like that again. Like, it would be supremely lucky. I do think LeBron is still at the top of his, you know, talent, but that's going to be dramatically falling off in these coming years. Anthony Davis, don't even know what to say. Fucking in Russell Westbrook, again, I give the nod to him. I don't think this is going to be Russell Westbrook's fault, but I don't think trading for Russell Westbrook made the Lakers any better.
Hate to say it. Well, Ben Simmons is still on the trading block. Maybe they should have went after him instead.
Now, here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. If Ben Simmons' asking price wasn't so high, I would even roll the dice and say, hey, shit, if there's a way, I wouldn't doubt it. I mean,
is there anywhere Ben Simmons goes and makes the receiving team better?
Yes. The Nuggets.
Really?
Absolutely.
At what cost? Because you'd have to.
That's always the tough asking price. See, Philadelphia's asking for Ben Simmons like he's still a second round pick in the 2017 draft. But, like, we know who Ben Simmons is now. Yeah. He's like Kenneth Faried with a broke jump shot and a bigger body.
Sad.
Very sad. Honestly, I think he could make the Nuggets a lot better, but, like, if the Nuggets are giving up anything more than, like, two firsts and a sub-level player, then it's too much. And by sub-level player, I mean they have to be worse than Michael Porter Jr. in a sense of sheer talent and definitely potential. I'm not very familiar with the back end of the Nuggets roster right now, so I don't have a player in mind. But I think that's a sure team that doesn't need Ben Simmons to A, facilitate, B, sit around on the perimeter. That motherfucker can run around and be PJ Tucker, and I think he could be a great PJ Tucker without the jump shot.
Tall Draymond Green.
Fuck yeah. Hell yeah, dog. Exactly. And tell me you wouldn't pay mid-level money for a tall Draymond Green.
Hey, I mean, like I said, Ben Simmons has definitely proved me that he can do good things on a consistent basis. I don't think he does enough great things on any basis.
Absolutely.
To be what they're asking him to be, or what they're asking to be paid for him.
No, absolutely not.
But I've actually come around to, I like Ben Simmons a little more than I used to, because at first I was like, man, fuck no, what the hell? But I've actually come around to, he's solid. I would take him, but first things first, I'm getting him off that point guard shit. He can be a forward, but someone else will bring the ball up the court and have court sets.
I think Ben Simmons would make a great three. I don't know why. I don't know why we're ignoring this.
I don't know why he's ignoring this. Like, no, I'm a point guard.
Like, nah, it would be amazing to see someone else carry the ball up the floor.
Like,
him on the wing is like.
I saw perfect. The vision that they had when they drafted Ben Simmons, and he said, "Oh, I want to be point." And then they turned around and drafted. Oh, damn, what's the old boy's name?
Mark Kelly?
Yeah. No. Markelle Fultz. I saw the vision, man. It was there. Obviously, he's rebounded, you know, in Orlando. But which I do think, I mean, he did need to be away from that situation up there. But
yeah, because, I mean, you can't have a situation where what the fucks are just at every corner.
Yeah. But, I mean, we're talking about, like, I saw what they were trying to do. They get a real point guard, a scoring point guard. You got your tall facilitator type dude, you know what I'm saying? And he could run the, you know, transition. He's great defensive matchup all over the court. Like, I saw the vision. It didn't work out because you basically were stuck with Ben Simmons as your true one after the whole Markel Fultz shoulder whatever incident that they still haven't admitted what exactly happened, but people think it's that motorcycle thing. But either way, man, it's just one of those things that, like, Ben Simmons, he'll make some team better. Some team, I think, will have to be like a fringe team and overpay for him in the hopes that they get like one or two years shot at a title. I'd see him on a team like that. Shit, the Warriors were asking for him, since we're talking about like that.
Man, but odd man out, you know what I'm saying?
I mean, who would you trade for him from that team? Like,
I'd trade Andrew Wiggins for sure.
Andrew Wiggins?
Yeah, I would trade Draymond, but like the other side's not gonna be feeling that. And the Warriors need their picks. actually, you know what I'm saying? They still have James Wiseman. I'd get James Wiseman the fuck on out of there. I don't think the 76ers again. I mean, they have Joel Embiid, but these are just thoughts that I think would really work out. James Wiseman or Andrew Wiggins, definitely not both of them, unless the 76ers are coming up off of something clean too. But they've already given up all their young, really tight assets as well. I was a big fan of Thibault. I don't know either what they had going on there. But at any rate,
they chose Tobias Harris over Jimmy Butler. And I like Tobias Harris, but they chose Tobias Harris.
They chose no. They chose Ben Simmons over Jimmy Butler. Tobias Harris was just the chess piece, dog. But I don't think they could have been in the same locker room. I think that was the real issue, was Ben Simmons and Jimmy Butler.
Hey, Ben,
shit.
Jimmy Butler's been both ways. Like, look, man, he's like, I'm tired of playing with niggas like that. And every place that Jimmy Butler has moved on from, He's been proven fucking right.
Yeah, dude. Look at his fast teams. All examples.
Shit going on with the Bulls and he left. Everyone's like, man, Jimmy Butler tripping. Nah, the Bulls fucking fell apart.
Everything fell apart. Minnesota. Trash can.
With Tibbs again. Then he was like, nah, man, Tibbs, tell these niggas they fucking tripping. I'm out. And then everyone look at them shit and that shit fell the fuck apart. And he goes to Philly. He's in the playoffs, and he's taking the last shots of the games and shit like that. He's over there, and they're like, yeah, man, I think we might want to extend Ben Simmons over you. He's like, really? Bet. Now look at them shit. Them niggas are falling the fuck apart. And you can't do nothing about it. They say, look, Jimmy Butler was a real-ass nigga. And I wish he would have had a little bit more. Honestly, I know we talked about the Lakers were supposed to win that last finals, and I think we all picked them. It was just a variance of how many games it went. But – the more that I watched the end of that series, like, Jimmy Butler was actually, like, really giving them hell. And I think that if Goran Dragic at least was – because, you know, he had that patellar injury.
Mm-hmm.
They could have had something like them first three games. No, that shit was not it. But they turned that shit around the last three games. They were giving them a series. They could have at least pushed it to seven with a fully healthy Goran Dragic giving them a smooth 20 a game like he's supposed to be. Or
right.
So, I mean –
baby Steve over there.
That was his little problem before he left.
Man, I really wish the Heat could find themselves a true, like, fucking 4 or 5, I don't know, anything bigger than Jimmy Butler that isn't afraid to, like, beat the block down all the way through and through.
So not Bam Adebayo.
Not Bam Adebayo. Maybe Bam Adebayo, but not solely relying on Bam Adebayo to beat the block down. I don't think he has it in him to be a full-time five. A swinging four, possibly.
I mean, he's not
a full-time five.
I mean, basically he's an undersized Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard, undersized center.
Exactly. And like, now he's having that conflicting where I feel like his mind is like, I want to be on the perimeter. Let's play on the perimeter. But like, perimeter small guys that are supposed to be in the paint never work. It just doesn't work. Unless you have a big guy that can just play that one true role of subbing in and beating the block down. And they don't have that right now. They need to go get them a fucking Boban Marjanovic. That shit is insane. Sub them in 5 minutes at a time and just slow the game down real quick. In fucking saying how much it works. I don't think they, being as a team, utilize it the way they should, but it works.
You see how they do with Brook Lopez and Giannis and on the
boom. Boom. Another one, what, dog.
I'm not saying Brook Lopez, quote, won them the series, but I'm saying inside Brook Lopez and Giannis, that's what, you know, that's how they got smoked.
Exactly. Once they started playing bully ball and controlling it from the inside out, it becomes a chime where it's like they can literally turn that shit on and off. And once you get that type of control, dog, man, it's almost unbeatable, especially when you have a guy like Giannis who's just, whew. I hate to say it, bro. Once he put on them black forces, bro, it was a rapsky.
Hey, look, I'm not going to lie to you, man. He did that, then they won 4 straight.
That's what I'm saying. We stopped seeing Devin Booker's whips and started seeing Giannis's black forces. it was crazy, bro. Like, I was so hyped. Every time I saw a fucking drop top 6'4 and Devin Booker in it, I was like, this nigga's about to drop 40. I saw Giannis with the black forces. I was like, yo, this man's supposed to be at home with his knee wrapped up. He's walking in the stadium in some black forces and sweats, bro. Hate to say it, dog.
But with respect to Devin Booker, the nigga was still dropping 40.
With respect to Devin Booker,
he was still
Chris
dropping.
Chris Paul sold this man, dog. Yo, fuck Chris Paul. I was gaining so much love for Chris Paul because, you know, I've always had a low-key hatred for him. He's really? the next point guard after Steve Nash and, like, the great line of point guards, you know?
Yeah.
Steve, Chris, Steph, you know what I'm saying? Next through and through. So, like, Chris Paul was always the next guy who was, like, the greatest point guard in the league. You know, always had that small animosity. Because he's always looked at as better. I never saw it. Obviously, he's pretty much defined his career as a top three point guard that's ever lived. You know, neither that's here nor there. The last four games of the series was just like, oh my goodness.
I thought he got a little overhated for the last two games. The first two games they lost, I'm like, yeah, CP.
But well, my thing is that you can tell the way sometimes he is trying to dictate the game. And I feel as though there were certain moments in the back end of those third and fourth quarters of games, I think it was 4 and 5,
yeah,
where he just lost control. And he wasn't in control yet. In Chris Paul's mind, it's like he was still trying to get everything in motion. Yet that wasn't what was needed. I feel like the Suns needed to pick up the pace and push the drive, and that's not what Chris Paul is doing. He kept trying to slow everything down, get set, turnover. Slow it down, work it down in the paint, shot clock's getting low, bad shot. And, like, that would just continuously go happen, and the Bucks would run down in transition and score immediately. And then the Suns take 20 seconds off the clock and then don't score anything. And, like, you'd watch that happen 5 times at the hands of Chris Paul, and it's just like, A, why isn't the fucking ball in Devin Booker's hands?
Yeah, I think
B,
game four. Oh,
yeah. And B, fucking DeAndre Ayton was a shining light for that Phoenix Suns team. One of the things, you know, beating down the block.
Yeah.
I feel like there could have been so much more of a threat on the Devin Booker, Ayton, supreme pick and roll late in the game than the Chris Paul, Ayton drive and dribble. Because that shit always either ends in DeAndre Ayton making his own shot or Chris Paul fucking shooting some mid-range left bank hook that's like, yeah, he's great for that shot. But it just got to a point where I feel like he was losing control and there's a much better situation that could be had. That's where I started to feel like, yo, facilitate or get out the game.
I mean,
because I thought, honestly, campaign should have got more minutes.
Possibly. I do agree with that. And he probably could have got more minutes. But at the same time, I just feel like Chris Paul was, especially like games 3 and 4, I think it was 3 and 4, where he, 2, 3, and 4, or 3, 4, and 5, where he had like averaging like 6 turnovers a game or some shit. Like he had like a shit ton of turnovers. And that's when you're saying was happening. Nah, last couple games, he kind of, you know, tightened it down a little bit. I think it was game 6. And it was Devin Booker at the end. I was just like, bro, like, it was kind of the opposite. I was like, man, y'all had a lead. Y'all lost the lead. Y'all came back. Y'all got the game. Keep it under control. And Devin Booker's going 100 miles an hour trying to do this and that. I'm like, no, this ain't what we need. Campaign's in the game. He's trying to go 100 miles an hour. I'm like, damn, Chris Paul's on the court too. It was Cam and Chris Paul on the court. And I feel like Chris Paul let that shit you're talking about get to him and it influenced him in the moment where he should have been doing that. You know what I'm saying?
You know what? I can completely agree with that. I feel exactly what you're saying on that.
And they lost control at the end of that game, and obviously the Bucks won. I mean, because the game was close, and I was like, man, the game this close, and like maybe the ball should be in Chris Paul's hands. And then obviously everyone knows the end of the was it game 5 where was it game 4 or game 5 where he ended up tripping over himself and turned it over to Holiday.
That was game 5.
So we're looking at that, and then like, well, why wasn't the ball in Chris Paul's hands the next game when Devin Booker, you know, went down and got, you know, caught up basically, right?
Right.
And that, and we're like, well, maybe he let the end of last game affect him. Then he said, well, last game I turned it over at the end. What happened in this game? Obviously, Devin Booker, you know,
turned it over.
going, he's fishing for a mid range shot, picks up his dribble, expecting to jump and get a bump. Middleton doesn't jump. Giannis comes over and doubles. He's fucking stuck. Drew Holiday comes and makes a fucking great dig. I mean,
that's the rest is history.
Obviously, but that's really more just great defense. But it was like, could there have been more options on that play? Yes. Why were there not more options? Because I feel like Chris Paul gives him more options. Because, I mean, in that situation, Chris Paul is usually, you know, yes, he does get to that mid-range shot a lot, but it's usually what they're giving him. Because if they don't give him that shot, then they open up to Mikal Bridges in the corner, to Jay Crowder. Mm-hmm. On the wing there to Devin Booker on the other wing to dumping over to Ayton. That game, Ayton started the game off like 6 of 7 in the first quarter, had like 12 or 14 points, something like that.
Yeah.
Chris Paul was doing. So they're like, okay, well, we take away all the other shit, and now we just let Chris Paul shoot. Let Chris Paul beat us. And I think that's kind of what happened. Chris Paul was like, well, he's going to take it because they're giving it to him. But I feel
right, but
at the end of the game, I feel like they'd have put him in that situation. And also, they weren't calling a lot of fouls at the end of the games. They were letting him play through it.
So, which is, you know, that's good basketball. I can't knock them for that.
I like that.
Exactly. But I also feel like in that same situation with, you know, the ideal of letting Chris Paul beat them, well, it's all about capitalization. Chris Paul's got to beat them, and he did not. Which, obviously, that's not all on Chris Paul, but, you know what I'm saying? I feel like through and through, you're exactly right. They found that through that best scenario of defense, it's going to be best fit to just go ahead and push it out, let Chris Paul beat them, and that he did not.
I don't know, man. I just wanted to see something happen for him because I don't think it's going to happen again. I think it was a one-off.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's it. Which it kind of sucks, but legacies were made, and I'm here for that.
Got the NBA draft that just went down. How do you feel about who do you say had winning drafts? You know, winners and losers from the draft.
Ooh, man, that's tough. I really like the Magic's draft. I thought that the Warriors had a subpar draft.
Really? With both of their picks?
Not. It's like I felt like who was it? The G League guy, the Jonathan Kuminga.
Yeah.
I feel like that was a decent pick overall, but not the best pick for the Warriors, if that makes sense. Now the Moses Moody pick I fuck with for sure. I just feel like I kind of wanted the Warriors to go a little bit on the air of maybe like Franz Wagner, or possibly just go all in and grab fucking, I don't know. I don't think Josh Giddey was still available, but maybe like Zaire Williams, like a true wing three, because I do not believe in Andrew Wiggins. And I feel like they went for more of like that post four kind of swing three guy. Which is fine and dandy. He's a good overall prospect. I just don't think it's the best fit for the Warriors, and there were better fits on the table that I would have liked them to grab, if that makes sense. And, yeah, I really did like the Magic's draft, though. Obviously, they did take Franz. They got fucking Jalen Suggs. With the budding talent that they've got already coming up, I think that the Magic could probably make a really nice dent in the Eastern Conference next year. They were already hovering around, like, the 40-win area, 35-ish. I didn't really care for the Hawks draft either. How about you?
I was getting ready to just mention them. I feel like they might have just bolstered a couple of spots that they really needed for depth.
Elaborate.
Steve Cooper?
I like Jalen Johnson-ish. But, like, I feel like that's just going to take away from the budding talent of Cam Reddish.
Cam Reddish is out of there, man. Yeah, I think. Okay, so no. Let me put it this way. I think Cam Reddish is out of there not because I think he's bad. I've been a little low on Cam Reddish since watching him in his time at Duke, just because I always got the idea he's supposed to be better. And then he shows he can be, and then there's a lot of times when he's not. So, I mean, we're looking at a guy who's – and then on top of that, you're throwing injury questionability onto him as well. It's not worth it to me, not to sit on him for that long. We're going into year three of him, and I don't think he's played more than half a season.
Yeah, but, I mean, year one wasn't due to injury. Year one was due to mainly just sheer minutes press. And I think that went down to coaching.
That went down to coaching, and yes – coaching is gone in that respect. But, okay, he didn't get a lot of minutes because he was underperforming. I mean, he was out there shooting like 30-something percent. He needed to make strides in defense. He can be good defensively, but especially as a rookie, when they were looking at potentially being a low-end playoff team last year, they were trying to be, and he came out and was playing like defense is one of those things during the regular season where that'll get you benched quick.
Absolutely.
So he was out there. He was marginal on defense, and I don't think he was good enough or efficient enough on offense. I was like, if you're going to be like, all right, on defense, you need to be pretty fucking good, or at least, you know, have a sustainable game where we can keep you in. We're not literally losing points by the possession, keeping you in there. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And he wasn't that. So, I mean, short of sending him to the G League, that and injuries, and then he came back this past year, and I know he got injured, but before he got injured, I mean, he really wasn't playing that much better. He was slightly better. He was flashing a little bit more often, but it was just those times in between where it was like, man, he's still having those, like, 2-3-game stretches between – he'll put up, like, maybe a 3-game good stretch, and then, okay, he'll maybe have 3 or 4 games where he's just like, just look like the same old Cam Reddish. And I don't know if they can – as fast as the league's moving, and now that they're basically in a win-now state, making that – Eastern Conference Finals, which I don't think many of them expected to at the beginning of the season or even halfway through the season when they were like, what, 7-20 or something like that? Like, they're in a point where they're much farther along in their development. I think they need more immediate results than what he can offer right now, unless he does make that jump in year 3. But just going off his first 2 years, it doesn't seem entirely likely.
Now, I totally feel that, but I guess the next question here is that how much do we feel Jalen Johnson immediately fills that void?
I mean, Jalen Johnson, as far as what him and Cam Reddish do the same, they're not really the same type of player.
They're completely different.
Huh?
They're completely different.
Yeah, I mean, so I wouldn't really put him as far as adding shooting – the shooting and defense that you thought Cam Reddish is supposed to be like a 3-and-D type player, you know? And obviously that he did come back in the playoffs from injury, and he did have that one game. He exploded for like, what, like 20 points in the second half or something like that?
Yeah.
And that's just nice. Like, if that's what Cam Reddish is going to give you, no, Jalen Johnson isn't going to replace that. And I don't think – not immediately. But if Cam Reddish is going to come in and – maybe give you 3-of-12 shooting for 3 or 4 games in between a game where he puts up 20.5. I don't know. I think maybe he can be a little more consistent. Especially if we're going to have an offense where you're basically spaced out. Trae Young's going to get free run at the rim basically every possession. And Jalen Johnson wasn't really a sharp shooter, but, I mean, he's a hustle guy that can at least pick up misses. And he can work around the mid, you know, mid-range. He's got a little back-down game. So. I think is sorely needed because there is no way in hell I need to have Trae Young out there for, like, 40-plus minutes a game in the playoffs. 6 games a series. And I like
– Sharif Cooper NBA ready?
Huh?
You think he's NBA ready?
NBA ready? I mean, I feel like Sharif Cooper can have the same effect that Devontae Graham did in Charlotte. It might not be in 1 year, but he was a 48th pick. He doesn't have to be immediately ready.
Yeah. I didn't expect that slide.
I didn't expect that slide. I thought he was going to be at least a late first, early second, but I mean, mid-second.
I think this pick, though, I think the 48th pick shows his true talent right now. I do see a hell of an upside, and I think that obviously pairing him with Trae Young is one of the better duos in the league for, like, having someone to kind of mirror. But I just don't feel like the Hawks answered – like, I feel like they theoretically answered some questions in the draft. Sure, let's find another true three. Let's find another backup for the point guard position. With the Sharif Cooper pick, I feel like they took, you know, best player available. And I feel like with Jalen Johnson, they were they're trying to fill a void that's obviously completely different. I think they're looking in a different direction, which I felt like the Hawks have been trying to mask their scheme and go into a different entire scheme like throughout this entire season. And I think this is a precursor to what they'll look like next year as a more bolstered, big, slowed down team, which I'm not a fan of. I think this team should be played through the backcourt at a very high level and a very high pace, working through picks and screens and that nature. But again, I'm not an NBA coach. Also have no idea what the Hawks have planned. That's just what I've been feeling throughout the past season. And I kind of thought that with this draft, they would either prove me right or prove me wrong. And I feel like they proved me right.
Well, they weren't in my top, like, they weren't my favorite draft, but I feel like they at least, you know, they gave themselves options. Like I said, they're not dependent upon a Cam Reddish, and I feel like Sharif Cooper can eventually be that guy. Kind of like, I know I said, like, Devontae Graham, that's probably not a good example because he plays nothing like Devontae Graham. He doesn't shoot nearly as well. But kind of like Campaign, I feel like he's in that same boat.
Mm-hmm.
He can offer the same kind of energy, the same kind of spell that, you know, obviously someone at Chris Paul's age needs. It offers a dynamic where they're both on the court at the same time. You got to pay attention to, you know, two different kind of games. You can run offense two different ways. So, Trae Young, obviously, he's in his prime. Dude's, like, barely 21, 22 years old. So, we got a dude that, you know, obviously – he's going to be around for a long time, and you want to keep him. You don't want to burn him out too much at this age because, I mean, those guys play so many games a year, and now everyone's talking about, you know, load management per se. If you can lighten that at some point throughout his prime, I feel like you got a better chance. And I like the, I kind of like, you know, at least proactively thinking about that and grabbing someone that can help with that.
In theory, I completely agree. I guess just as a, you know, in the now watching as a fan, I'm kind of disgruntled. But in theory, you know, you're absolutely right. Preservation is key in this day and age in the NBA. And when you do have a true bona fide superstar, you know, obviously you want them to be that for as long as humanly possible.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. It kind of, like, skipped out on me. Anyways, yeah. So, the actual team I want to talk about is the fucking Hornets. Best draft in the
fucking league. There we
go. Best draft in the fucking league. My opinion.
Preach.
I don't think you can ever give too much praise for a team that's been shitted on for so many years for their own fuck-ups. And I think for the last, like, four drafts, they finally got it right every time.
So which one was your favorite pick?
Which one? Oh, for sure.
Absolutely.
Ah, Jones.
I love it. I love it. I knew
getting James Booknight, I was like, man, I was like, there was Kai Jones. There was, who was the other? There was the other center. Was it from Notre Dame?
Fucking,
It was, but Kai Jones was the one that I actually wanted. I forgot the other dude's name. Obviously, I knew we weren't going to get Mobley.
Well, yeah, of course.
But it was
Man, I can't think of Buddy's name either.
No, it wasn't. My bad. It wasn't Notre Dame. It was Isaiah Jackson. That's what I was thinking of.
Isaiah Jackson.
Yeah, ain't like the power forward.
From
Kentucky. I saw another person that was because I was reading mocks. Someone had mocked us Daron Sharp, and I was like, man, I pray to God. I was like, I know we need a big, but it ain't that bad. So like, okay, so here's why I say the Hornets had a great, because all that's aside from what actually happened. What actually happened is made a trade on the day of, moved up 20 spots, got Miles Plum or. Yeah, Mason Plumlee from the Pistons. for basically nothing, a 57th overall pick, and moved up 27 or 20 spots to the 37th pick. Made a future first round trade pick. So basically what I think we got with Plumlee, we got the same thing Cody Zeller was, but instead of $15 million a year, at $8 million a year. I can live with that. Turn around, you got a veteran at center. You get your young guy that can run the court and probably is going to be a lot better than him initially, but I think he's still going to need just that veteran guidance. You know what I'm saying? So you get your guy. So you basically got your mentor, your veteran mentor at like half the price as your old one, your actual young center who's going to be running the floor fast break. Like, I know they said a good call Hornets Lob City, but kind of slow down on that because, I mean, these niggas still got to play. And James Booknight, you know what I'm saying? Like, Booknight's that guy that I feel like Malik Monk's supposed to be, and we could lose Malik Monk right now, but I feel like he's kind of already at the same place right now where Malik Monk was before, you know, the end of last season. So, or if he's not that far, I mean, I don't think he's that far off. So
honestly, I don't think he is either.
I feel like he's definitely coming in a much stronger place defensively. That's what kind of the same thing. Malik Monk was getting benched because of defense and then inefficient shot, you know, selection, and just then wasn't just making a lot of open shots either. And it was just bad till, you know, he caught track. And I feel like it's not going to take a full three quarters of a season for him to catch track and then, you know, get on. So I feel like Booknight's one of those guys where, and he's also not dependent upon it also, because we still got Rozier for now, still got Graham for now. Hayward, like, we're just in such a better position. I feel like all we did was just bolster depth, which we sorely needed once all those guys I just named were fucking injured.
Absolutely.
So I don't feel like, you know, someone gets injured and they miss 6 weeks. Not saying LaMelo fault, obviously he fell and broke his wrist on, you know, on the court, but say like Gordon Hayward's out for 2 weeks, like, am I gonna feel like, well, we're gonna go like 1-6, we're gonna give up like five games where we have scored less than 90 points or less than 100 points in the 90s because we don't have anyone that can score over 20? I don't feel like that now. I feel like we got at least, because at any given point, we had about six players already that can give you 20 points. Now I feel like at any given point, we got about eight or nine players that can give you 10 to 15. Absolutely. And I like that versatility. And if we keep LaMelo healthy, we employ that same pick-and-roll type offense that the Suns have, basically make Kai Jones your Ayton, basically make LaMelo your Chris Paul. You let everyone else on the perimeter do their jobs defensively on the other side, and you're running. You're just running. Miles Bridges has become a 40% 3-point shooter. PJ Washington is right on that edge. Maybe PJ Washington doesn't have to bang, like kind of what you're saying about Bam Adebayo. That's how I feel about PJ Washington. Maybe he shouldn't be on the block, banging down the block all game. Maybe about 4 out of 10 possessions, but he's really just as good in that mid-range and out just as well. So
absolutely.
Shout out my boys. They actually, I feel like they got it right. And we got a couple, you know, defenders as well, guys that could at least just instill some toughness into the team, because they did kind of play like some bitches sometimes. I ain't like that.
But I think out of the Hornets and the out of the Hornets and the Magic, if I had to look at two teams over the next 5 years that would make drastic, drastic moves to the top of the conference, it would be one of those guys.
I like the Rockets draft, too. I mean, it's very hard for the Rockets to miss, also.
Right. I feel like the Rockets had a draft that's like, they did what had to be done. Now let's see how it pans out.
Right.
I also liked the Zaire Williams pick.
Yeah.
That was a nice pick for the Grizzlies. I feel like it's one of those ones that they could get grilled for in the coming years, but right now it looks good on paper, and it's probably one of the better upside scenarios of the draft, in my opinion.
Hey, look, man, we need it.
So she, what up?
Man, that's all I got for today, man. I appreciate you coming through.
Yeah, bro. I'm gonna go hit up Olive Garden.
Hey, man, do better than that. I know you got it better.
You're right.
But
all right, girl.
Appreciate the talk, the education.
Absolutely.
All right, man.
All right.